Duly Noted, a health and care podcast, is the official podcast series of Duly Health and Care. Each podcast features physicians or team members discussing groundbreaking topics and innovations that help listeners reimagine and better understand an extraordinary health and care experience.
When you hear about respiratory infections, you might think of a common cold. But these illnesses can range from mild to pretty serious. And today, Dr. Ravi Nemava is here to guide us through prevention, recognition, and effective treatments. He is a pulmonary medicine, sleep medicine, and critical care physician at Duly Health and Care. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Doctor. Can you start us off by telling us what are respiratory infections and what are the most common types?
Yeah, so respiratory infections, that's a broad definition. And you think about respiratory infections, we have to include the entire respiratory tract. So we're talking about the nasal cavity, the sinuses, the back of the throat, the main windpipes. And then sometimes we get into these lower respiratory infections, which involve the smaller bronchial tubes and air sacs of the lungs. And that's what we would typically refer to as pneumonia. But the vast majority of respiratory infections will affect the upper part of the airway, which includes the nasal cavity, the sinuses, and the back of the throat, and sometimes the larger airways before they get too deep into the lungs.
And how do respiratory infections spread? And what steps can individuals take to prevent transmission then?
Yeah, so I think probably to understand that, it's mostly there's four types of organisms that will cause respiratory infections: viruses, bacteria, some fungus or mold, and then there's rarely parasitic type infections. And each one of those categories are spread just a little bit differently. But the vast majority of respiratory infections are spread through the release of respiratory aerosols or respiratory droplets. So these infections start usually in the upper airway. That's the first point of contact of these organisms as they kind of get introduced to our body. That's where these viruses and bacteria will have a tendency to replicate. And then when we cough or sneeze, we'll then release our respiratory droplets and aerosols. And with that sometimes is the virus and bacteria particles. And so those things get into the air, and it's pretty common to then have someone in the neighboring regions of you inhale those aerosols and cause the transmission of the infection to the next person. The other way of doing this is sometimes we cough into our hands or we'll cough onto surfaces, and these droplets then linger on these surfaces. And if someone else touches the surface and then contacts their nose or their mouth, then that can be a point of introduction of these organisms into the next person as well. So usually aerosols and usually droplets, very rarely through contact, direct contact, but there are some classic examples of direct contact respiratory infections, most classic being mono, being direct contact being necessary to transmit that.
And are there certain populations, such as children or older adults, who are more vulnerable to respiratory infections?
Sure. So when we think about why do people develop respiratory infections, there's a number of factors that go into it. From the organism itself, it depends on how virulent that organism is. So how prone is it to actually cause invasion into your tissues and actually cause an infection? So how effective is that going to be? And then also the total amount of organism that you're introduced to. So if there's a large amount of organism and that organism is highly efficient at causing infections, it probably doesn't matter about the population that's going to cause an infection in somebody. But in terms of susceptible populations, these are what we call host factors. And really the host factors are going to be dependent on a number of different issues. Number one is your respiratory system is exposed to your environment every day. You inhale your environment every day. And so by design, the respiratory system has some built-in self-defense mechanisms. Some of the common things that we don't normally think about are our nasal hairs, right? Our nasal hairs are like physical filters. It prevents particles from getting deeper into our respiratory system. There's a layer of protective cells that line the entire respiratory tract that also try to prevent organisms from invading our tissues. There's a mucus layer, and that mucus layer usually is thin, very watery. And if things get trapped in there, it becomes very easy to cough them out and expel them from our body. And then there's a built-in immune system that is very active within the lining of the respiratory tract that can sometimes be so effective at preventing viruses or bacteria that we inhale from even causing infections because they're very good at preventing that. So what I would say is, if you think about those natural defenses, the people who are more prone to developing respiratory infections are people who have some issues with their natural defenses. And so when we think about children, children are at the very beginning point of training their immune system. So they don't have quite a professional immune system yet in terms of how memory is built in to fight off infections, but they're learning that. That's part of the process of being a child. Part of being a process of getting a child is getting sick, getting exposed to these organisms, and training your immune system to have a better fighting off process as you get older. There's all kinds of lung diseases that lead to structural changes within the lungs that disrupt the normal mechanism of that inner protective lining, as well as that mucus production. So oftentimes, patients who are chronic smokers or people who have chronic structural lung disease are going to be more prone to developing infections. Lastly, our immune system. Is our immune system intact? So there's many conditions that we treat these days that can affect the function of your immune system. It can actually reduce the effectiveness of your immune system. So certain biologic medications or chemotherapy can lead to a less effective immune system and increase the propensity to develop respiratory tract infections. And lastly, as our population gets older, there's a certain frailty that develops as we age. And that has to do with our general medical conditions. What are the other medical conditions that we deal with? What's the nutritional state as we get older? All of those things factor into how effective our immune system is going to be to fend off the things that we're normally exposed to and possibly increase the risk of developing respiratory infections. I'd say there's one thing I didn't talk about, but within our respiratory tract, we normally, what we call colonize the respiratory tract with certain bacteria, certain molds. These just live in our respiratory tract as part of, you know, the normal process of being a part of this world. And that bacteria can provide some degree of benefit to us. You know, we can't colonize bacteria if it doesn't cause benefit to us. But this bacteria sits there and it occupies space and it likes living in our respiratory tract. So anything else that's a foreign invader can come in, it has to compete with those bacteria for places to cause infections. And so these bacteria and these fungal elements sometimes are very protective at, you know, preventing a new infection from developing. And in some ways, when we overtreat with antibiotics, not only are we killing a bacteria that might be causing problems for us, but we're also killing those colonizing bacteria. And as we kill those colonizing bacteria, some of those elements of benefit will start to go away too. So got to be pretty careful with overprescribing antibiotics.
Of course. Thank you for that thorough explanation. So my next question is, how are respiratory infections then diagnosed and what tests are commonly used to confirm a diagnosis?
So the gold standard or the real way that you confirm a respiratory infection is through a culture. What this is taking some sort of sample of the respiratory tract and putting it on a certain nutritional medium and then putting it in an incubator, and then having someone take samples and look under a microscope and determine specifically what's causing a respiratory infection. That is the gold standard way of confirming a respiratory infection. It's absolutely necessary in certain circumstances. The best way, the most reliable way to get this respiratory sample is to do some sort of invasive procedure, to do some sort of swabbing of the respiratory tract, or even in the lower respiratory tract, do a procedure called a bronchoscopy, where we can take a telescope and go deep into the lungs and get some samples. The problem with cultures is because we have all of these colonizing bacteria, results are not always reliable. And then it's not always practical to do invasive procedures like bronchoscopies or other types of scopes done by ear, nose, and throat specialists. So practically, what we can do that's pretty easy is some sort of nasal swab. However, this will only tell us if there are particular organisms. Most commonly, we test for things like flu, RSV, COVID these days, and then traditionally also strep and mono. And these are just simple swabs that can be done in a doctor's office. And we usually put it in some sort of testing media that tells us if we have one of these bacteria. Now, again, it's limited. It's not going to tell us the entirety of what's going on. Some of those swabs can be sent for what we call a PCR analysis. And this uses some sort of genetic technique to be able to tell us more specifically what's causing the infection. So these are all different ways that we can make the diagnosis, but the vast majority of time, we're relying on our clinical decision-making, our clinical acumen, and that sometimes coincides with what is going on in the general population. So if we're going through a flu season and we see a spike of flu and someone acts like they have a viral infection, we probably don't even need to do a diagnostic test to diagnose that person with a flu.
Well, what are the potential complications of respiratory infections, and when should individuals seek out medical attention?
The vast majority of respiratory infections are going to be viral in nature. And most of the viral infections, you know, they're not trying to kill your host. They just want to use your cellular engines to replicate their viral particles and then have you cough it out into the world so that they can keep replicating. So the vast majority of respiratory infections, which are viral, will have what we call a self-limited illness. And this can cause things like fever, sore throat, runny nose. And I think that that's the majority of symptoms. And so most of the time, people just taking good care of themselves, resting well, probably have about a week's worth of illness. In some situations, where the virus or the bacteria gets deeper into the lungs and starts to affect the bronchial tubes, you can start to see an acceleration or a worsening of symptoms. And this is where people will develop bronchitis, may develop some sort of asthma-type symptoms, a tightening of their bronchial tubes, some shortness of breath, hear whistling sounds from their lungs, something that we call wheezing, maybe have more increased amounts of mucus production. If your lungs are generally healthy, you can probably handle that, again, in a self-limited manner. Sometimes the symptoms last for a little bit longer. But if you have conditions like asthma or conditions like COPD, this can sometimes trigger a full-blown exacerbation or flare-up of the asthma or COPD, and that can lead to very significant degrees of shortness of breath. And in some situations, the virus can get a little bit deeper into the lungs and start to affect the air sac, and this is what we call pneumonia. And when people get pneumonia, they usually feel very, very sick with that. There's a loss of energy, high fevers, coughing up large amounts of mucus, sometimes chest pain, and then that pneumonia can sometimes get even worse and get into the chest cavity. So what I described was the most common, which is usually very mild, but some of the more major complications can be experienced. And so what I would tell most people is expect that you're going to be sick for about a 7 to 10 day course. However, if it doesn't follow that pattern, if things aren't getting better or if things are getting worse or you're starting to develop symptoms like shortness of breath, chest pain, that's certainly when you need to seek attention.
So what can individuals do to boost their immune system to prevent these respiratory infections, especially during those cold and flu seasons?
It's not necessarily during those cold seasons, but just living a healthy lifestyle probably is the best thing that you can do. Living a healthy lifestyle, taking good care of your medical comorbidities, whether they be things like heart issues, kidney issues, or diabetes, offers the best opportunity to send off infections. Having a good nutritional state creates a good immune system. So living a healthy lifestyle is the best thing that we can do to limit severe complications from really any kind of infection. Respiratory infections are no different. There's been some controversial evidence on vitamin and mineral replacements and whether or not things like zinc or vitamin C or vitamin D may actually help to boost the immune system. I feel that they're controversial because there hasn't really been a large volume of repeatable studies that show that that's a reliable way of boosting the immune system. But I don't think that any of them hurt either. So as a result of that, I think there's very little harm to taking those vitamin supplements. I'm not sure if there's truly a benefit to boosting the immune system, however. In addition to your taking care of your general health, what I would say is that if you have a respiratory condition like asthma or COPD or some other chronic respiratory issues, that's the more susceptible patient with respiratory infections that they're going to have an increased chance of it getting worse. So if you have one of those conditions, or if you have a condition that affects your immune system, when you develop a respiratory infection, have a heightened level of awareness. If this isn't getting better within 24 or 48 hours, you probably are the person who should be coming to the doctor's office sooner rather than later.
All right. Well, what about lifestyle factors such as smoking or air pollution? Can those increase the risk of respiratory infections?
Yeah. So for decades, we've been studying the negative effects of smoking on the respiratory tract. And what smoking does is it causes a high degree of irritation and inflammation within the respiratory tract. The byproduct of this is to cause increased mucus production and start to cause chronic damage to that inner layer that lines the respiratory system. If people continue to smoke over time, then the anatomic structures, whether the and the microscopic anatomic structures of the lungs will start to get damaged. And as they start to get damaged, you start to lose the normal defense mechanisms. So things like habitual, repeatable smoking, it eventually does chronic, irreversible damage to the respiratory tract, which then by definition will negate the normal defense mechanisms that increase your risk of respiratory infections. So that's the most common and best documented environmental factor that most of us have control over that can lead to an increased propensity to develop respiratory infections. Last summer, we dealt with the air quality issues in our country with the Canadian wildfires. And when they started to come into our regional locale, what they did was the particular material of the fires that people inhaled caused irritation in the bronchial tube. And that irritation, those periods of inflammation, can then make an increased risk of developing respiratory infections. So I actually did see that a lot. I saw a lot of patients who initially experienced the irritation from inhaling the smoke particle. And because the bronchial tubes were so irritated by that, it increased how prone they were to developing viral infections. I'll also see this in patients who go and travel to other parts of the world that have much poorer air quality. So you know, they have no history of respiratory ailment. And then they go and they inhale this really bad air quality, and their whole trip was ruined by persistent bronchitis and infections, and they come back and it takes several weeks for them to get better from that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are some common misconceptions about respiratory infections, and how can those be addressed?
I think the most common misconception is that respiratory infections are bacterial and that they all get better with antibiotics. I had an old professor tell me that. And so the reason I say this is because most respiratory infections are viral and antibiotics aren't going to treat that at all. And I had an old professor once tell me that if you have a respiratory infection and you get treated with an antibiotic, you'll get better in 1 week. But if you don't treat it with antibiotics, it'll take a whole 7 days. That just kind of reflects that most infections are not bacterial in nature and antibiotics have no effect on it. In fact, the overuse of antibiotics has been well documented to cause other problems down the line for us. So I think that's probably the number one. The second misconception, I would say, is that vaccines are ineffective. Maybe for every individual, you know, you have to take into account whether or not a vaccine is going to be helpful to you. But we do see, like in certain populations, like say in the nursing home, if the nursing home population is completely vaccinated against pneumonia, invasive forms of pneumonia, or is vaccinated against the flu during the flu season, you'll see much lower transmission rates within those six populations. So vaccines, when used appropriately, can be highly effective.
Wonderful. Well, are there times of the year that people are more susceptible to respiratory infection? I feel like we may think of winter, but is there other times that we should be keeping in mind?
Well, I see respiratory infections throughout the entire calendar year. I will tell you that we do start to see a spike up of things like flu, common cold, RSV infections in the fall and winter months. This probably has something to do with, you know, when we're in those climates we're very much indoors and in closer quarters with one another. And so the transmission of those viruses increases. However, even if you look down in Florida, where they have less of a winter and people are less indoors, they'll also see spikes of flu and RSV during these fall and winter months. So it's hard to really pinpoint a particular time of year that is more susceptible, that people are more susceptible to developing respiratory infections. But we certainly see spikes in the fall and winter area.
And wrapping up today, Doctor, what advice would you give to listeners to help them stay healthy and minimize their risk of respiratory infections?
Number one, by far, don't smoke. That's by far. Smokers are more susceptible to developing respiratory infections. They're more susceptible to developing more severe respiratory infections. So number one. Number two, strive to live a healthy lifestyle. Take good care of your general health. Have good nutrition that boosts your immune system and really helps to limit illnesses. The third thing I would say is if you experience a respiratory infection, keep an eye out for how this is trending. If this is starting to get better after about 48, 72 hours and it's following a typical path towards resolution, you're going to be fine. But if it doesn't follow that path, if things start to get worse, if they're not resolving, that's the time to seek opinions from a medical professional. Seeking that opinion in certain situations when the infection is getting worse, seeking an opinion or an evaluation from a physician or a nurse practitioner or another healthcare provider sooner rather than later oftentimes prevents some pretty bad outcomes down the line.
Well, a great and informative episode today. Thank you for joining us, Doctor. And thank you for listening. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it online and check out our full podcast library on your favorite podcast app or at DooleyHealthAndCare.com. This is Dooley Noted, a health and care podcast from Dooley Health and Care.